Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Hello and welcome to Wellness with Centria of Eddie's Wellness and Resource Center. Today I'm coming to you from the Woodstone and Massanutten out here in Virginia. It is a beautiful, beautiful day. I am coming down off of this ski lift, and this is a totally new experience for me. So what I found out today is that I don't really like being up too high without being able to control how I come down. So that's something that I definitely have to work on and will continue to work on by continuing to go up and come back down in different ways. So today, as stated, we are going to have Trek on of Trek Consulting Services, and we're going to revisit Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and what's going on in that market.
Hello.
Hello, Trek, how are you?
Thank you, boss.
Okay. I don't know why, but you were a little muffled. So if you could say that again, I don't know if it's because of where I'm broadcasting from or not.
Okay, sorry. Does it sound better now?
Yes.
Okay, got it. No, I was just saying, you know, I'm here. It's a Wednesday hump day, enjoying the sun outside. I actually just came from a luncheon with some of my old coworkers and just catching up with what's going on with them. It's just funny how the world or things work out in the universe. I'll leave it there. And I'm glad to hear that you had your experience. Not everybody's a fan of heights. I've done the hot air balloon thing, so I can definitely understand.
Yeah, and the thing is, I got the second half to go, but the highest point is over. So we'll be getting on the second half of it in the moment to get down to the street level, which will be awesome. So... cryptocurrencies. Last week, it's been about 2-3 weeks now, right?
Yeah. It's been a couple of weeks.
Did you guys have the session at Bowie State University, and it was about diversity and inclusion in the cryptocurrency space. What were your thoughts and feelings on that whole discussion?
In short, like for me and what I think, reviewing back over what was said there and then just other discussions I've had, and the overall of just seeing what's been going on in the space, I think that in some way, hello?
What do y'all think? Your good day goes before and water park?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, so I think that in some ways we have barriers to entry to the space, and that we, you know, in the beginning the conversation was, well, if you aren't really a techie person, you might kind of really have a hard time doing this or understanding it, as opposed to giving people, you know, more solutions to understanding the technology or understanding at least the level of it that was relevant to them. And granted, there are more, you know, YouTube and Google options now compared to what it was 3 years ago. But then we also moved to the other part of it where it's like, well, you know, if you don't have this amount of money, you can't be a part of it. Because there's the economic entry to barrier, as opposed to letting people understand that, hey, there are ATMs and you could just start off at doing $10 or $20 worth of a Bitcoin or a Litecoin. You know, we put up a bunch of barriers to entry, and I think in some ways, in my opinion, we did a disservice to the general public if we're making the argument of we want mass adoption, as opposed to,
right,
you know, acknowledging that, yeah, there are some, you know, difficulties to getting into the space. We focused more on that, and we kind of limited what the solutions were to helping people. And that's what I'm trying to work on changing right now, with giving people practical and understandable solutions. By providing that content in context, the discussion at Bowie, I think, was one of those things to help, you know, minorities and people of color understand, like, this isn't just about the techie folks. This isn't just about people who are computer programmers. Like, not everybody's going to be a computer programmer. The person who works the graveyard shift at the nursing home doesn't care about computer programming. They just want to be able to understand how can they get it, what the wallet does, and how easy is it for them to use. And those are the things that we need to, you know, start breaking down more, as well as like getting people to understand that it's not just the technically inclined folks. You need accountants. You need HR people. You need marketing people. You know, it's not just about the programmers and the people who do, you know, web stack development and stuff like that. They're not the only people that make up this community.
Right. And so I believe, and one of the things that we spoke about in reference to that, when we were following up where the diversity and inclusion was concerned, one of the things that was pointed out was the lack of women in the space. But what we found was the lack of women and or minorities in the space on speaking on it. And even just in that session, I think that people came to understand and realize that that supposed lack of those two groups actually was not the case. It was a U.S. Lack of persons in those two groups that was really the issue, because globally the minorities are fully involved, or what we would consider to be minority groups are fully involved in this cryptocurrency, and women are fully involved in the cryptocurrency space on a global scale. So with that in mind, what do you think needs to occur here in the U.S. to where the language shifts from creating an institution of diversity and inclusion in this space and just making it known and aware that everyone is naturally included in this space, because it is just another, for lack of a better term, as a description was given, another app, another application that can be used to facilitate your daily living. The whole platform of diversity inclusion for the blockchain space really sounds more like a throwback to the STEM and Silicon Valley issue that was occurring in the technology field. So would you say that that is what it is, that it's like the runoff, the residue from that, and that they're being overlapped and interlaced together when they have completely nothing to do with each other from the very beginning.
Okay. That was a very well-packed plethora of statements and questions.
Okay.
All right, so what I will say is, one, and I recently wrote a particular perspective that we did expand on in our, you know, personal conversation about the space. I recently wrote about it on Medium, where, you know, I just broke it down as far as the thing of, we need to get away from, one, the corporate language and the framework mm-hmm. that's being put on the space, and understand the basic principle of this technology. You don't need permission to be here. You do not need to ask a higher education institution. You do not need to ask a centralized government. You do not need to get the okay from some central authority that's going to tell you it is all right for you to be able to read about this technology, understand the technology, use the technology, or come up with whatever idea it is. And to be clear, I'm not telling anybody to go out and, you know, come up with some new business model that breaks the law and does something quite, like, just totally illegal. That is not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is, this technology is open to any and everyone, male, female, child, older person. It doesn't matter. There's no discrimination on age. There's no discrimination on gender, sex, and ethnicity. And the idea that, you know, diversity and inclusion, as far as the American perspective of it, is the global thing, it is so far from. If I go to Nigeria and I talk about cryptocurrencies and blockchain technology, I'm not asking the question of, hey, are there enough people of color in this discussion? If I go
right.
to Cambodia, or I go to Southeast Asia, Seoul, Korea, I'm not asking at a conference, well, where are all the females at? But for some reason, when we start talking about things along that line in America, we got to start throwing out these gender roles and these gender ideas and these perspectives that, as far as the bigger community goes, and this is a global community, we really need to get outside of that whole American thinking process of it's about us. And no, this is not that. This is a whole nother level. This is about anyone who wants to be involved. And if you have the wherewithal to, you know, go through learning and figuring out what aspect of it you can do, it's there for you. One of the things that was brought up was like, well, you know, X amount of the world, less than 50% of the world has internet service. But X amount of the world has smartphones. X amount of the world, and I'm talking about outside first tier countries, have some kind of access to technology, even though it may be limited. If you go to, you know, some of the outskirts of Pakistan or Afghanistan, like, there are literally places that you can go to in the Caribbean that I've been to. And this is right here in the backyard of the United States, where there is no running water. There is no electricity to the house. But those people got smartphones.
Right.
So it goes back to the point of, like, you know, there are solutions, and we need to work more on promoting those solutions, even though they may not be full-time, you know, possibilities, or they may be limited to you know, access and region, but they're still there. That's the thing.
Right.
As well as, like I said, like, the diversity thing and argument of there's not enough, like, what's the magic number? Explain to me, what is the magic number for diversity and inclusion in a community that is global?
Right.
How does that work out? It's not just America and Americans that are in the crypto space. So
right.
I've yet to have someone break that down to me.
Right, because really, as, like, when we were like I said, speaking, following up, when you look at STEM in other countries, women are heavily represented. It's only here in the U.S. because we've just begun to allow people to take steps to find out what they're good at, regardless of gender or regardless of their skin color. And so I think that that is why we have this issue, and that's why we have this come up, because no other country really has that issue. They fully embrace who is their workforce, regardless of what the workforce looks like. And so that's opened opportunities for everyone, where we're still in our infancy in that. I mean, we're still in our infancy as a country. So I think that's just reflective of that as a whole. And I think it's funny, too, like you said, they talk about that people don't have access to, and they usually use the blanket statement, oh, a lot of the world doesn't have access to computers. But if everyone has at least one smartphone in their house, then everyone has a computer, because they are handheld computers at this point in time. So even though some of the programs are not necessarily as easily to navigate mobily, they do have access to everything. And then I was speaking to you about the whole Bitcoin being available on Cash App. And so that whole thing is opening up doors for people, again, like you said, to at least start to become familiar with the currency, become familiar with the exchange rate, become familiar with what it is to use that as part of their regular daily transactions, not having to be one that develops the currency, not having to be one that develops the program for how it's going to be used, where it's going to be used, or even keeping the ledger, as they say. One of the statements that was made and that you made at the session was that blockchain is the cell phone and the cryptocurrency are the app. So if people can keep that in their head, then it makes it even more easy to understand how to use it, where to use it, and where it can be functional. So basically, with this type of technology, and where I see the issues arising based off of the conversation at that session is that it allows you to cut out a lot of the middlemen. You can do direct business with companies using this currency overseas.
Yep. Okay, so in regards to the metaphor that I had initially used that day, that is the bottom line of it. The technology itself, you know, it's like what Samson, who was also another panelist, brought up. Like, most people don't care about the magic on how their smartwatch works, but they know that they can use it for X amount of different functions, which is the same thing about blockchain. Most people do not care about what the protocols are and what inter-block transactions are, or, you know, these ZK-SNARK stuff. Like, most people don't care about those things. Us really techie folks, we have fun talking about that stuff. But in order to make the mass adoption happen, we have to work on getting it to the point where you don't have to worry about those details. And like I said that day, you know, the convenience factor for Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency is really low right now, but it is further ahead than where it was a couple years ago, which is a very big thing in moving towards the mass adoption. So, you know, what is it, like 3 years ago where you didn't have the option of using coin payment to accept cryptocurrencies, now you have that option. And that's the idea. The idea is to be able to have it work and function in more of your daily life, and you not having to know the back end part of, well, how does that app work to be able to accept the cryptocurrencies and deal with the fluctuating rate of it? And, like, well, what's the whole wallet thing about? Like, you don't have to worry about any of that now. All you have to do is tell your customer, hey, you know what? I started accepting cryptocurrencies, and it's through the same main payment solution that I was using before. You're going to see the option button further down. That's all you got to tell them now. You know, like, right. That's the part of mass adoption that we need to work on more and frame it to the public to get them to understand, like, solutions are being made. Things are being brought to the public. It's just working more on getting that word out and letting them know, like, it's not as complicated as some people want you to think.
Absolutely. So where do you see the availability to use this technology as currency showing up next? Where it will have the most impact?
Honestly, in my mind, I look at it and there's two levels that we have going on right now, as I see it, right? You have the big talk about the people who are the venture capitalists and the Wall Street folk type, and there's a whole bunch of talk about ETFs and who's going to be the first one to get the blessing from the ICE or the SEC and all that stuff. And then you have our level stuff, the ground level people, the everyday folk, the person who's not making 100K and your actual, you know, take home is like 30K a year, your net, right?
Right.
Two different tracks of folks, two different realities, two different solutions apply in that for the ground level folks, the real issue or the real benefit is going to be when I can start using cryptocurrencies to buy more than just, you know, the random thing like a coffee. And you can use it for buying things more than just a coffee. Newegg accepts cryptocurrencies. There's a website called purse.io, which you can get X amount of things off of. What's the website? Amazon. So things that you would look for on Amazon, you can find on purse.io, and I think you get like a 10% discount on the price if you use cryptocurrencies, you know. But the idea being is that payment solution options, that's really what's going to help most people in first-tier countries like America, like Europe, and being able to have the option to pay outside of fiat. That's the bottom line of it. So can I pay for this bill at the restaurant? Can I pay my phone bill? What is it? I think it might be Arizona. I forgot the state right now, but they're talking about being able to come up with an option of taking it as a payment option for state taxes. You know, like when those things start happening more, that's going to be that's the area to work on, to get that option within those realms. When more people have that option in those everyday, realistic underground realms, that's when I think the adoption will happen. And it's been pointed out that, like, the interest, granted the price might not be what everybody wants and it's not mooning and 10Xing and all that stuff, but there is definitely a lot more conversation going on about cryptocurrencies at this point in time compared to what was going on last year. So you got government folks talking, you have your regular everyday folks talking, you got news people talking, you have educators, you know, the smart technical people talking. The conversations are happening at various levels, from the government to the everyday person in the barbershop. So now it's just a matter of let's start putting out those solutions that people can actually use, and not just solutions for people who are already rich and trying to get richer with ETFs and margin calling and all of the fancy, you know, trading stuff.
Right, and that's what I was just really thinking about. As it becomes more of an everyday thing, or, you know, something that people think of second nature, I was just considering more of the stock value and it becoming an absolute commodity. And so by it already having been around for over 10 years now, as far as it actually being out there, but it's just getting to the public within the last couple of years, where people, the everyday person, is just really becoming aware of it. And as we saw, like, the cost per bit now could be anywhere from $5,000 to $11,000 on any given day now. Because those who are savvy at moving commodities figured out how to move them. Where does that everyday person getting their hands on currency in of itself that aren't business people? Like somebody like me or you or just your everyday store owner, if they are receiving the currency as a form of payment, then obviously you instantly have access to having that piece. But if you are the person who's trying to figure out how to get their hands on it, and like you said, you may only bring home $30,000 a year, at what point am I going to put out $5,000 to $11,000 to get my hands on one coin to make that investment or to have it as something that I can use for payment to get into that space? How do you see that playing out? What would it be for that?
Okay. Well, let me jump back one. So when I say mass adoption, or when we talk about getting the word out to the public, to be clear, the public, as far as what people in America are understanding, is very different than what's going on in the rest of the world. Right now, Japan accepts crypto within their retail market. So that means you can go into a 7-Eleven and you have the option to use crypto. Right now, there's a town in, I think it's like Ukraine, where the mayor of the town was like, all right, we need to figure out how to work to get everyone some amount of crypto. And I don't remember what the name of their version that they came up with, but like everyone in that town has crypto. And that was because of what was going on with their economy and their local fiat and the inflation issue. So they worked out to where, you know what, you need to buy some braids, you need to buy some eggs. Here you go. Now start making that that micro economy work out for where you can get what you need on a daily basis, right? Now, like I said, like we're talking about the public. It's two levels of public in this conversation. There's what's going on in America, and then there's what's going on with the rest of the world, and that's kind of two different things. As far as the everyday person, you know, our level stuff, it's, you do not, and I don't know how much I can really reiterate this point, you do not have to buy a whole Bitcoin. You do not have to buy a whole anything, because within this digital money, you can do it in decimals. You can do it in smaller increments. You can do it where you can buy in at a cost average. So case in point, you know that your discretionary fund, which means the money that you have after all of your bills are paid, is, let's say, $50, right? And let's say that's $50 every 2 weeks. That's what you have left. You can take $20 and put that on the side and you can use the $20 to buy in $20 worth of a Bitcoin, $20 worth of a Litecoin. Eventually, when you cost average in, your total of what you've been buying in every 2 weeks will add up. You can do $10. If you know somebody who's already in Bitcoin, be like, hey, bro, I got $20. Let me get $10 worth of what you got. You can do a peer-to-peer transaction. You don't have to go through a Coinbase. You don't have to go to any of these exchanges, really. If you know somebody who's into crypto and they have what you're interested in, you can just be like, hey, I have this amount of fiat. I'm interested in trying to get this amount of crypto. And there you go. That's called a peer-to-peer transaction. That was the whole point of this thing. Coinbase just realized that they can make money off of becoming a centralized point for you to on-ramp, meaning for you to be able to take the fiat and get the crypto. But you don't have to do that. There's ATMs. There's miners. There's a bunch of different solutions for people to get into this space, and this is what I've been trying to argue out the point of. It's not as complicated as some people want to make this thing sound to you. And for the issues where there are barriers, there are also solutions.
Okay. So basically, for us in America, we just need to, again, and I hear what you're saying, but again, that comes back to knowing people as far as the everyday person getting their hands, starting to get their hands on some of the currency to do those exchanges. So what do you think is the best way for people to network and find people who already have some of the currency so that they can start doing exchanges with them?
Okay. I'll give you another one. There's this thing called local traders, right? Local traders is basically a network of folks who have already been in the crypto space for however long, and they have, I think they primarily deal with Bitcoin itself, right? And you literally just, you know, join a network. You can Google that and you'll find it, local traders, where you can come across somebody who is willing to sell X amount of their crypto for X amount of fiat. Or you have it where somebody wants to sell or buy X amount of fiat off of you for this amount of crypto. Like, you can do it either way within that network, and that's directly going to someone in a peer-to-peer network. Now, granted, there is a markup on the price, and then depending on how much you get, you might have to do a KYC thing, which is know your client, which means, like, provide official identification. But that's not you verifying it to the individual you're actually buying from. That's you actually having to verify through the third party that allows you to connect to that person, right? There are other, like I said, there are other solutions. Here's another one for you that I'll throw out there, which is something that can be done, right? And this is what the money folks do. I'll take $10,000 and I'm, quote, an accredited investor, and I'll go into one of the venture funds or the investment funds or family trust, and I'll be like, hey, I have this amount of money. They'll take my money and pull it together with somebody else's $10,000 or a couple other people's $10,000, and then they'll do what is called an OTC, an over-the-counter trade. Over-the-counter trades is literally what rich people do, is their version of a peer-to-peer transaction. It doesn't take place on the market. It's literally, hey, I got $50,000, and I want $50,000 worth of whatever crypto. And then they work it out within their, escrow and banking thing. But that's how rich folks do it. You can do the same thing at the grassroots level, where you pool X amount of your friends together, and all right, you got 100, I got 100, this person got 100, bam, okay, cool. Now let's go find somebody, a local trader, and then you work that out with that whole thing, and then you give everyone back what they put in, worth of the fiat into crypto. like zero options.
Like
you know what I'm saying? Like
concept.
Yeah.
Those are groups.
In that
groups
concept, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, that is a plausible solution. Both of those. Do you have the information, the website of the first group you were talking about?
Like I said, you can Google that one. I don't know it offhand. Mm-hmm. I just know it's called Local Traders.
Okay.
And there's another website where you can find the Bitcoin ATM. And now you're starting to see come out Litecoin ATMs, Dash ATMs. And there's another one that I can't think of. But you're more readily to find a Bitcoin ATM than you are the other ATMs because, you know, it's a slow and steady mm-hmm. process to get those particular other cryptos out there. And you're depending on what city you're into, that's another part that plays into it. So if you're in a New
right.
York, a DC, you know, like Crystal City in Virginia, you'll more likely see those different types of crypto ATMs, compared to if you're in, let's say, Philly, where I believe it's predominantly, if not all, Bitcoin type, ATMs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So the other thing that was spoken about, there was education for young people in the crypto space and also on the backside of that, the STEM space, if they did want to be persons who created programs for the currencies and how to encourage that in the youth communities, regardless of gender or race. And of course, the focus was back on females in STEM, where that was concerned also. What are your thoughts on the youth and this crypto space and the crypto technologies, and where do you see going in this space and developing in this space?
In general, the youth have a natural curiosity.
In general.
I'm framing it a certain way. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So
mm-hmm.
in general, I feel like youth in general have a natural curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
They will gravitate towards the technological inventions and ideas and things naturally. They want to do things different naturally from the older generation that precedes them. They want to
mm-hmm.
come up with their own ideas naturally. It
mm-hmm.
isn't until you get older and you start going through X amount more in life and you get accustomed to doing things a certain way or accustomed to the everydays of life and like the patterns that are set, right? And so
uh-huh.
for the younger folks, just in general, naturally, they're going to want to do different. I'm not worried about that part of it. That's just a natural inclination of the younger generation. But as far as how we in the States are,
mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% certain, honestly, what it is that we should do or could do. Considering the amount of NGOs, special interest projects, and, like, the amount of money that gets moved around for schools at, you know, elementary level, junior high level, high school level, community programs, you know, like there's like Girls Who Code, there's different other programs going on in New York, there's those in like California, Silicon Valley, there's things going on for DC, and yet we are still having an issue with trying to put out a population that is diverse and inclusive that will still hold the interest in STEM-related subjects past high school, past college. And mind you, I've been, you know, I was in college a good while ago. But what I see happening in other countries like Eastern Europe, Southeast Asia, X amount of what's going on even in Africa, you know, whether you're looking at Nigeria, Zimbabwe, Kenya, South Africa, they don't have the same level of monetary investment going on, but yet there is a I'm not 100% certain how to describe it, but what I noticed that their younger folks in that college age range are a lot more eager to make moves and take chances and follow through on the fintech, the technology, the application of the technology to business, as opposed to there's something that happens with us. And I don't know if it's necessarily a cultural thing as for how we are with education and how we are with, you know, the gender roles in education. Because think about this, right? If you look back in, and I believe we're in the same age range, how many people did you know growing up who were a doctor, a lawyer, or a female who did one of those things, or an engineer, right? But we had things like the Cosby Show that showed us that you could be a doctor or a lawyer. And we knew those things existed in the world. But how many of us actually knew somebody directly, right?
Right.
And when I look at what's going on now in this space, which and when I look at, like, technology, just not, you know, blockchain crypto stuff, but technology, I look at my Twitter feed, I look at who I see on LinkedIn, and it goes back to this whole thing of, like, this American perspective. Like, there are a lot of females in my Twitter and my LinkedIn feed where I see them do, you know, program engineering to the more computer science stuff, to who's a blockchain developer, to who's an electrical engineer, to who does cybersecurity. And, like, we have people there, and I know those people are working to get the word out to have other people come in too. You know, they're doing the interviews, they're doing presentations, they're doing all that they can at their level to let other people know, hey, come on into this field. Look, I do it. I was able to go from somebody at an elementary school level who probably had no idea that this is where I would be, but here I am now. And you could do it. I know that doesn't necessarily sound like a solution answer. In all honesty, I don't know. Because, like I said, considering how much money we move around in our education industry in America, and people come from all around the world, I don't get why our numbers are what they are. And I don't know if it's more so of a cultural mindset for what goes on with us here in America, as opposed to what happens or how it's worked out in other countries. I just note that there is a difference.
Okay. So basically, at this point, would you say that instead of having older adults introduce other children into the space and into the usage of the applications of the currency, that maybe another child or a preteen or a teenager or a young adult that has been in the space for a couple of years would be better suited to instruct other young people in it because they don't have the biases already in place that older people do when interacting with people in general, especially younger people?
I think that's a double-edged sword because then you get into the whole ageism thing. Because, like, I hear that said that kind of stuff said now, like, oh, you know, blockchain and cryptos is a young person's game. And I'm like, wait a minute, how did you even come up with that? Because the people who used to program Atari back in the day when Atari first came out, and that's like 30 years ago, they're not no spring chickens. They're people in their 40s, probably going into this, like, range of 60. And they're in this space now working on projects that they would have never thought of 10, 15 years ago. So it's not like, I think that that kind of argument on how do we get the young people in, if you start getting at the age thing, is a double-edged sword in that, okay, yeah, you might be able to, quote, relate to me because I have X amount of the same interest as you, but there's a certain level of knowledge that you're not going to get in 21 years. You need, like, 45 years. And then understanding X amount of the back end of how something technically works, that if you talk to a person in any kind of school now on what they've learned and how much of the theory they understand, they could tell you X amount of the stuff, but then put them in the real world and then compare them to somebody who's been in it for like 10, 15 and have the actual practical application and understand technically how the thing works on the ground. There's two different levels of experience that you get, and I think that you need one and the other to help present this out, or at least to, you know, have, I guess, I don't know if to say some level of balance, but yeah. I think that you try to just, like, you know, let's start just looking at the younger folks on, like, you're going to lose something when you're not including the people who are more mature in age because they have hands-on experience and knowledge that you are not going to get if you're just, oh, yeah, I just graduated high school and I'm going into college. All right, cool. But there's those little things that you didn't get yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to explain that.
So I guess what I would say is, and when I said have the younger people teach it, I was just looking at it from a standpoint of the delivery and them knowing what verbiage to use to know that the message has been received and the application can take place. As far as what information goes out through that medium, I definitely would be a proponent of it being constructed by someone who has constructed and or has lived in it for a number of years for the practical application. For lack of a better term, you would have the experienced person, and I'm not going to use the words age at all because experience has nothing to do with age. But have the experienced person develop the curriculum, and then the person that is relatable deliver the message, and have that experienced person maybe there not to deliver the message, but if there are some cues that need to be given, some things that need to be clarified, then fine, have them give it. But I was just looking at, like, what is the best way and the quickest way and the most effective and efficient way so that when the young people do pick it up, because like you said, when they pick it up and they get a hold of it, they're going to change it in some way, which is fine. That's natural. Everything evolves because when different hands get a hold of it, that's what's naturally going to occur. But you want the information, the idea of the information to still remain as pure as possible. And it's delivery, and then, like I said, with the understanding, because me speaking to a class and one of my peers speaking to a class is going to have a completely different effect if I'm more relatable to that class than my peer is. And that's not, you know, my opinion. That's a fact. I mean, I've seen it played out over and over again. And even though I was relatable to certain students, there are other students that my peers could get the message through to better than I could because I had no point of reference. So sometimes it's good to let people be strong where they are and, you know, kind of let the ego get out the way and so that the mission can take place, you know, so can the objective can be reached. And so that's my thought on it.
I totally agree with your point on it. And I'm sorry to cut you. Continue.
No, I'm good. Yep.
All right. So I totally agree with you on what you said about how, you know, you have the whole thing of the relatable personalities connecting with the different folks. As the same as, like, would I take a 25-year-old and have them go to a retirement home or a community center and then look to talk to people who are in their 60s who are about to hit retirement and tell them about cryptocurrencies and blockchain and stuff, or how they can use it to be a potential asset to their portfolio? No, because they're going to look at them and be like, okay, first off, what, like,
yeah, you have 30
what do you
years
even
to
know?
Portfolio.
Exactly, right? But it also brings to the point about one of the things that it is a real double-edged sword for me about the space, right? In that if you talk to the people who've been in, and I've said this again and again, if you talk to people who've been in before 2016, and if you've been in longer, so if you go back to like 2011, 09, you can, in simple conversation, very clearly understand there is a difference in the mentality of the people who came in later as opposed to the people who were in earlier. And I say that to say this, right? For as much as we would love, and I'm one of those people who would say, for as much as we would love to have the purest view of something, stuff changes, things evolve. This whole space is about open source. And as it moves forward, the younger and the older, men, females, wherever you're from, we're going to have our ideas and we're going to look to build on it and make this space grow in ways that people just did not think of in the beginning when it first all started. That is like blockchain technology and what's going to happen with cryptocurrencies. And it will eventually get to the everyday part of life.
Okay. So we actually ran out of time. And we can pick this back up at another time, and I'll be looking forward to that because this conversation is just beginning because there are so many different aspects to it. Even though it seems very simple, and the more I speak about it, the more I talk about it, the simpler it gets because there are so many different pieces to the puzzle. I think it would be good to revisit and probably, honestly, sometime in December because that's far enough away but close enough to where we'll be able to see and measure the changes that are occurring.
I can't even imagine what's going to happen between now and December, honestly, considering just
right.
how things have been going this week for what I'm paying attention to. I can't even begin to fathom what December is going to look like as far as what projects are going to come out, who's going to start making headway on certain things that they were trying to do from last year. And I'm not even talking about the pricing stuff. And then you have like the geopolitical stuff that's happening too, that there's some things that I'm paying attention to that I'm like, yo, how is this going to play out in like 2-3 months? Like, what is this country going to do? And yeah, like that's where my head is at about the bigger space and what I am worried about. Okay, so you know, like, yeah, like it's not just looking at the price and the volatility that happens. There's other things at play. In the space that I'm kind of curious, like, how is this going to play out? And December will definitely work as, like, another recap of what's been going on.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll be looking forward to that, and I will be in touch with you in a moment. Have a great day. And this is Centrea from Massanutten in Virginia, and we're going to say goodbye and make it a great day.
the big wireless companies sold you an outdated plan tied to long-term contracts and mystery fees. Simple Mobile's different. You get a lightning-fast 4G LTE nationwide network with no contract, ever. And keep the phone and number you love. Just text the word BYOP to 611-611 to see if your phone is compatible. Simple Mobile. Out with the old, in with the simple.
Standard text, message, and data rates may apply based on your mobile phone service. Please refer always to the privacy policy at simplemobile.com/privacy policy and the terms and conditions at simplemobile.com/terms and conditions.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Yeah.